Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I've been better.
I hear you.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 293.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Hello. Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by folks like you, the Auburn family, at Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, this was not an easy show for me to get motivated to come down into the luxurious White Rocket Studios and do. It was very difficult. I think I would have done a different show Saturday night, anytime on Sunday, anytime today, and then now Monday night. What about you? Have you kind of had the same view since the end of the game with Clemson, or has it kind of morphed?
Emotionally, it's probably morphed a little bit. I think in terms of how I allocate the blame, it's morphed a little bit too. I went back and watched some of the key parts of the game this morning, and that influenced my feelings a little bit.
I think this is going to be a very interesting episode. And you know, I have a feeling that this episode will not be one of our more downloaded episodes, because obviously when we're winning and things are going great and everybody's jubilant, then people share the link and they say, hey, have you heard these guys talking about the big win? Everybody's excited. Whereas for something like this, people just are like, I don't want to hear about it anymore. I don't want to talk about it. I want to ignore it. And I totally understand that. I totally get that. It's just unfortunate, because I think this is going to be a very interesting episode tonight. Certainly from my perspective, from my side of the aisle here, we've got major changes, major revelations. You know, I've been on the road to Damascus and the scales have fallen from my eyes, okay? So I think that a lot of people will miss this episode, but it's too bad, because I think they would enjoy it. Or at least they might find it either surprising or useful or therapeutic or something along those lines. But I totally get that this is not one that people are any more anxious maybe to hear than I am to do. Now, that being said, we have had quite a few people on social media asking, you know, Facebook, on Twitter, on email, asking, when are we doing a show? When are we doing a show? Because, and some, I mean, there was one person even said something along the lines of they needed to hear your pragmatism and my optimism or something. I forgot how they put it, which was a very effective way, an interesting way of putting it. I thought it was funny, but. But for those that are bothering to tune in and listen to this episode, we do appreciate you guys very much, and hopefully we'll have something useful to take out of this dumpster fire that was the Auburn offense on Saturday night in Clemson. I think we have agreed to set aside our normal format, and instead we're going to start tonight by...
Smoke weed every day.
No, that's not... I'm sorry, that's the wrong button. That was entirely my mistake. That was the wrong button. I should really
blame yourself.
Yeah, what we instead decided to start out with tonight was,
it's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 on the AU Wishbone podcast.
Thank you, Mira. And I will say, I want to clarify this right now before we get into the questions, just very quickly. You know, during the SEC West preview, you and I kind of agreed that there were three games out there that would tell the tale of the season. And we were very clear about it. We both thought we would lose one. And we both thought it was LSU. And I forget exactly what your position was beyond that, but I clearly said, if we lose one, I'm okay. If we lose two, I'm annoyed, but we still, you know, could win the SEC, and then from that point on, who knows? But I said, if we lose all three, I'm pretty much done. Right now, I feel like we're an 8-4 team. At best. Which would be a strike one, strike two, strike three, and we even get an extra strike four in there. So that's kind of where I'm coming from right now. I'm looking at a hard strikeout, and I'm not happy about it. But let's go into the questions now. Because the reason that I suggested at the beginning when we first got on, folks, the reason I suggested we do the listener questions up front is because I think that we have a lot, and I think that they're going to ask stuff we were going to talk about anyway, so this way we're not repeating ourselves later in the questions after we've already talked about it. So what do we got, John?
Well, and because we got a lot of listener questions, and they're asking the tough questions and the questions that we need to talk about. So our first question, I put this one first on purpose, is from Buck M's. His at Twitter handle is BUCKIMS. He says, looking forward to listening. Evacuated from Tampa for the hurricane. Watched the game, but mine was elsewhere. Mm. So we're certainly thinking about him. And I know the hurricane passed over, remnants passed over Auburn today. There was a lot of power outages and trees down and stuff. So we're certainly thinking about anybody who's, you know, in the path in Florida or in the Georgia or Alabama dealing with the remnants of it today.
Yeah, John, that's a very important thing because it reminds us that no matter how bad our little sporting event gets, there's things in the real world that are much, much worse. Plus it's the 16th anniversary day of 9/11, something that brought not just college football, but everything to a screeching halt 16 seasons ago. I remember it very clearly in Tommy Tuberville's third season. So, I'm glad that you point out that no matter how bad we may feel about a football team or a coach or something, you know, if that's your biggest problems you got in life, you're doing pretty well.
That's right. All right. I'm going to start with some questions that came into the email address at auwishbone@gmail.com. And the first one comes from MWG, which says, haven't we seen enough? Does anyone still need evidence this is all Gus has and isn't cutting it at the college level? What are the odds that Jacobs gets fired over the softball lie so he doesn't hire Gus's replacement?
Now, there's two separate things here, all right? Bear with me for a second. When you're talking about, is this all Gus's fault and has he reached the end of the line, let me just preemptively say, if we go 8-4 or worse this year, the specifics are not going to matter. Whose fault it was, who's calling the plays, whatever, those are just symptoms of the disease, but the disease is going to kill you no matter what disease it is, all right? Was it Gus disease? Was it, offensive line disease? Was it running backs hurt disease? Was it Stidham was not as good as advertised, or was Rusty disease? They're all fatal diseases, and we're going to die anyway, so it's not...
But I think there's something different here. Right. Because it is Gus, and the problems are the offense.
Right. No, but it's all going to kill him. He's gone.
No.
If we go 8-4, he's going to be fired.
I understand. If we lost that game the other night, 45-37.
Right.
And Stidham had 350 yards and three touchdowns that looked great. Petway had 100 yards and a touchdown that looked great.
Yeah.
But we just couldn't stop them. Defense is a wet paper bag. And Gus, was, and Chip Lindsey's offense was described as brilliant. But we still, because the defense was bad, we still were probably going to go 8-4. How would you feel? And this is a question for the larger fans, because would you say that's it, Gus? In the same scenario, if the offense was awesome, but we went 8-4 because the defense was bad, would you fire Gus?
Maybe just because we've been round and round this bush, and it would be right back to 2014. I would agree that it would be less likely because you'd feel like he had his mojo back, and once again he's like just got to find the right, you know, Gus finding the right defensive coordinator is almost exactly like Tuberville finding the right offensive coordinator. You know, there's years that he gets it wrong and we struggle, and there's years he gets it right and we're good on that side of the ball. And so when it, you know, if Tuberville's defense had fallen apart, we'd have fired him that year. And I agree that it's, you know, with if it's the offense, it is more on Gus. If it's the defense, you feel like we can go out one more time and find the next big defensive guy and throw money at him. And if Gus's offense is working, then you're back in business again. But honestly, this feeds into the larger question I have, which is that I'm just tired. I gave him an enormous line of credit after 2013. And through 2014, I was starting to say, well, you know, you still got an A bond rating, not A-plus anymore, but you got an A bond rating. And then 2015, it got knocked down to about a C rating. But I'm like, a C is not an F, John. It can still go back up. And then last year, I'm like, well, it went down to D, C to D. But there were times we were back up in the A to B range. And I feel like if we just get a couple of things corrected, we'll be back in the A-plus bond rating. And now this year, I'm like, seriously, I'm just tired. I'm tired of it. I'm just tired. But where I was going with that a minute ago, though, is when you talk about Gus and all that, yeah, we explained that. But what was the Jacobs thing? Here's the problem I have with the whole Jacobs thing. When people start saying, oh, well, you know, Jay Jacobs, he's going to get fired over this softball thing. And, you know, he's been dealing with the softball thing and it's going to come back on him. And when that happens, then he's going to get fired. And then we're going to hire a new athletic director. And the new athletics director is going to hire a new coach. And oh, that's gonna, to me, it starts sounding like people saying, well, you know, Trump's been dealing with Russia. And if we can just nail him down on Russia, then you get him out of there, and then Pence gets in there, and then you go after Pence on this, and next thing you know, Hillary Clinton's president. I'm like, wait, what? I mean, it's one of those things where maybe it's plausible, but it starts to sound a little bit like 9/11 was planned by George Bush. You know what I mean? It starts to sound like 75 people sent Oswald to kill JFK. It's like...
It's two separate things.
Right.
The issue is, you know, with this other stuff going on, I think it actually makes it harder for them to make any decision on Gus either way. But let's I want to come back to the question I asked you in the larger in this, because we have a lot more questions here. But this question is, if the offense was great and the defense sucked, I think there will be a lot less criticism of Gus personally.
Well, that's
I think
true.
Because the offense is bad, the venom is directed at him personally.
Yeah, I agree.
We know when we went into Tuscaloosa in 2015 and put up the most yards ever, you know, of my visiting team, people didn't say, man, that guy has no idea what he's doing.
Right.
So to me, losing by 8 points is the same. Whether the offense is bad and the defense is great, or the defense is bad and the offense is great. That's my thing about it.
People would be criticizing him and saying, why can't he hire a defensive coordinator? Why'd he go hire Kevin Steele, who sucks?
Because he is viewed as the off, it's like your question about if we're not running his offense, what is his value? If the offense isn't great, people question his value.
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
I think it's much more worse than it would be the other way.
I think his value right now is that we've been recruiting really well. He hired a good defensive coordinator, and clearly that part of the staff is working very well. I love our defensive staff. I wouldn't trade T-Will for anything. And so his value right now is he's got a program that with one major glaring – the special teams are fantastic, right? you know, with that glaring exception of the offense just having issues, things are great. And so, you know, I mean, we're going to dominate probably six or seven of the teams on our schedule this year. And then there's going to be two that are going to be tough. And there's three left that I'm like, I don't think we have a chance against them.
Well, hold those thoughts because we're coming back to that. All right. Our next question comes from Theodore Roosevelt, who says, What are the most frustrating games in Auburn history, and where does this Clemson game rank?
Oh, man. This one is right up there with last year's A&M. And you remember how I felt after the A&M game last year? That was the first time I ever stuck one foot off the Gus bus. Do you remember?
Which game was this?
Texas A&M last year.
Oh, yeah, man.
After the Texas A&M game last year, because remember, we barely lost the Clemson game. And we're like, well, you know, we hadn't seen the defense before. That was the first game where the defense played great. We were frustrated about quarterback roulette and everything, but we were so excited about the defense. We're like, man, the Clemson's so good, and we played it. We were throwing in the end zone to win on the last play, and you know, we were very frustrated. But on the other hand, there was a lot good that came out of that game in some ways, looking back. Then we welcomed Texas A&M in, and they just embarrassed us. And I'm like, how do we keep throwing up on ourselves at home against Texas A&M? I don't understand it. And so I was really, really frustrated last year after the A&M game, and that's the way I feel this year after Clemson. But last year it was a lot of surprise. This year it's just like, oh, not again, right? We've been told for a year that everything was fixed, and nothing is fixed. The defense is what we thought. The kicking game is what we thought. But the offense hasn't been.
I would say the defense is better than most people thought.
Yeah, well, except that Deshaun Davis got hurt, so.
He's fine. Our next question comes from Joey Miller, who's Aubice on Twitter.
Yeah.
A-U-B-I-E-C-E. Mm-hmm. And he has a long email, but he goes into, you know, he's talks about how he's been an Auburn fan for a long time. Like his very first game, one of his first games was saw Auburn beat Georgia in Athens 14-0 in 1963.
Wow.
So he's older than you and I.
Yes.
And so this is his rant that he says about Auburn fans today. He says, on the Auburn board that I follow, on Auburn blogs and on Twitter, I've seen many calling for a change in Auburn's head coach. Gus faces the same problem that Ralph Jordan faced, except Gus spells his Nick Saban instead of Paul Bryant. But he faces a problem that Shug never faced. Spoiled, rotten baby boomers in the Board of Trustees and rank-and-file GAF members, most of whom would have violated Shug's grooming standards. If Auburn football measuring stick is Nick Saban, then Auburn needs to give up football. That's not remotely reasonable. Auburn does need to play better and does need to beat Georgia. I look at the rest of the SEC except for Bama. Auburn should win. Auburn needs to find a pulse on offense, and I believe they can. The talent is there. He says, I went to Auburn during the last 9 years of Coach Jordan and the start of the Barfield glory years. 9 straight losses to Bama, most of which I just hope the score would not be embarrassing. 9 straight years. 9.
I remember it.
So when all the Auburn fans with their pitchforks, torches, tar, feathers, and search for a rail to run Gus out of town on, I'm really stunned. I want to yell, get off my lawn. He says, that's the end of the rant, but he says, this can still be a great season. I just can't believe what I see and read on Auburn boards, Auburn blogs, and Twitter. I can't even begin to believe Auburn football would be better off to blow it all up and start over from scratch. And it says his name is Aubice because it's an Aubice civil engineer.
Yes, I was aware of that.
Class of 77.
He is one of our White Rocket family, too, and we appreciate him. No, everything he said just then is what I've been saying up until this week. So I've agreed with everything he said there. The problem is the offense now. I keep feeling like I can't go into the thing I actually want to say because you don't want me to yet, so I'm not really sure what to say here. It's just the my position has changed because of the offense, and as simple as that. If they can't put a competitive offense on the field, and it's more than that, John. It's not just that the offense was bad. And I mean, he makes a valid point. I've said all along, if, you know, I've said from the beginning that the Alabama perspective is so limited. The Alabama perspective is Alabama's Alabama, and if Auburn isn't as good or better than Alabama, then Auburn is trash. You know, as I say, there's like 120 teams not as good as Alabama in a typical year lately. And if we're not number one, if we're number two down, then they just say we're trash. So, yeah, measuring ourselves to them is a fool's errand, because there will be years, hopefully, that we continue to beat them. But as long as their current regime is in place and getting away with what they're getting away with, it's just a fool's errand to try to measure yourself against that. Nobody can. Urban Meyer doesn't measure up to that. Jimbo Fisher doesn't measure up to that. Dabo Swinney doesn't measure up to that. Nobody does. Bear Bryant currently doesn't, you know, wouldn't measure up to that. So that's just silly. But, and I agree with him. But again, my issue this week, okay, my issue this week is not just that the offense is not competitive. My issue is that this offense was supposed to be substantially different, and it's not. My issue is that Gus said he wasn't calling the plays, and our offensive coordinator said he called all the plays, good and bad, and we're all going, good. My issue is that everything was supposed to be different and better and more clever. And I look at those two guys, and I say,
you lied to me.
That's what I say, because I can't – that didn't look any different to me. And people say, well, if the quarterback's running for his life every play, well, then call him some plays where he's not running for his life. Where are the screen passes that Lindsey's supposed to be so renowned for? Where are the quick slants, the blitz beaters? You know they're going to blitz. What the heck? Call plays that actually benefit the offense and keep the quarterback from getting sacked 11 freaking times. How hard is that? And I mean, if you think that they're on this, if you think that Gus and Lindsey, Chip Lindsey, are a well-oiled machine and they know what their responsibilities are, understand this. Gus said that they took the penalty to back up to kick the field goal on the first drive. Lindsey said that was an error that cost them, that they were calling a play. So they don't even agree on that.
I mean, I watched that part again today. If you want me to go into that, I will. I have strong feelings about that.
Go into that, please. I don't know why we're pussyfooting around. Let's just tell it like it is.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to. The next question is, do you think Gus called the plays? I mean, and multiple people asked
yes.
that question.
How did he not? Did you hear Barrett Salee today?
Very clearly, I do not think Gus Malzahn called all of the plays in the game.
All of the plays. Now, there might have been a couple that Chip Lindsey called.
No, I'm going the other way. This is my opinion.
Okay.
I think Gus called two or three specific plays in the game. I 100% think he called that Chandler Cox run on third down at the goal line, which is a play before the delay game. I think he called one or two other plays in the game. And, of course, as the head coach, it was his decision, for example, to go for it a fourth down. That's his call, and that's not the offensive coordinator's decision. But what I do think happened is that he and Lindsey had some conversation at some point in the last month, and Gus said, these are the parameters you are operating in. At this point in the season, you are allowed to call these kinds of plays, and at this part of the season, you're allowed to call these kinds of plays, and at this part of the season, you're allowed to call these kinds of plays. So this stuff that Lindsey did in the spring game, the more RPO kind of stuff, there wasn't as much of that.
No.
There were two basic plays, kinds of plays in this game the other day. Runs up the middle with Pettway and passes more than 15 yards downfield. And everybody's like, we got Stidham. We got these big receivers. Throw the ball down the field. The problem was there was too much of that.
That's all it was. That was the stupid mallet stand back there, survey the field, and get sacked offense that I hate.
I know that is your least favorite offense.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I watched that and I was just like,
Oh my God!
Exactly.
So my opinion is that Gus did not personally call the plays in the game, that Lindsay called the plays.
From a list compiled by Gus.
Well, maybe not even a list compiled by Gus, but a box that Gus drew around what he could do and not do.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. Why did we not run any screens or any out passes or anything like that?
We ran one bubble screen early in the game, and Clemson absolutely annihilated it. I mean, it was pretty obvious it was coming, and it was toward the Auburn side of the field, and Stidham was looking at the sidelines. He was looking at the receivers who threw the pass, and, Eli Stove missed his guy, and the defender sacked him in the backfield, so they didn't run that again. We ran one dump off late in the game, or attempted one regular screen pass to Cam Martin late in the game, and the Clemson defensive end recognized it and was in total coverage of him. There was nowhere else to throw the ball. We ran one, tricky creative play, the reverse flea flicker, and got a penalty on it, which was the right call. When the quarterback gives up the ball, the whole thing about throwing it away at near receiver, that disappears. And the idea is that if you're the running back, for example, you can't just throw the ball away if it's near receiver. You don't get that exception. That only applies to people who receive the snap and keep the ball. So when Stidham got it back, he was like a running back or receiver with the ball. That exception had disappeared. So he literally, had to throw it at a receiver.
Hmm. That's interesting. He couldn't throw them. I was wondering, that was a real mystery to me, how he didn't get to throw it away there. But
I want to go back. You brought up the goal line play a minute ago, and this was when I went back and watched those parts of the game earlier today. That was the part that made me the maddest.
Yeah.
Because the sequence, this is the very first series where Auburn got down to the goal line, okay? And so the sequence went like this. First and goal, Petway run ahead for 2 yards. Second and goal, Petway straight ahead for 2 more yards. Now we're at about the 1.5, 2 yard line or whatever. Third down, they change a bunch of people out. They run that sugar huddle thing.
Yep.
And they toss it to Chandler Cox running to the left. The problem is the sugar huddle thing didn't fool Clemson at all. And the way when we snapped the ball, there were 11 Clemson defenders like in the box. And 7 of them were on the side that we were running Chandler Cox to. So we were outnumbered over there before we even snapped the ball and ran that direction. If Stidham had seen that and done like a naked bootleg, he could have walked it in the end zone backwards probably. So, but instead he threw it, pitched it to Chandler Cox, and a couple of the guys got through because there weren't enough blockers, and they sacked him. Here's the real problem though. There were a bunch of funky people on the field for that play, and they didn't get in the end zone. So then they had to run all those funky people off the field, and run the regular offense, Petway and the wide receivers, back on the field for the fourth down play. Mm-hmm. And they had wasted 2 timeouts earlier on that drive. So even though it was the first quarter, we only had 1 timeout left, and I think they were reluctant to use it at that moment. And so the clock literally ran out while Stidham was trying to get people lined up, and players were running around like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to get lined up because we had this, the funky form, lineup on the third down Chandler Cox play.
Right.
So we had to run all these the regular people back on, and they ran out of time. It was not on purpose. We were attempting to run a play at the goal line. We took the 5-yard penalty and kicked the field goal.
Yep, and I've said all along, if Kerryon Johnson was healthy, he'd have scored both touchdowns on those field goals.
Well, this is a larger question. What we talked on the offseason, there was all this talk, like you were talking about the offense, about how the goal line packages were going to be better. That was a big point of emphasis. But was it just Kerryon and the Wildcat? Was that the fix to all those problems? Because there's no plan B?
No, there's no – Our team, at least on offense, has like 5 players that are indispensable. And if we lose any one of them, we are reduced on offense by like 20% of our effectiveness.
I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I with all the other guys, if Kerryon was the only offensive player that didn't play in that game, that, you know, that, that wasn't eligible to play in that game, you know, that we could have used. And so that to me is failure. You knew he wasn't going to play.
Yep.
So, you know, all right, we got a bunch more questions here. This is from Neil Page, who says, during the fourth quarter in the game, I became incredibly depressed with our quarterback running for his life every single snap.
Yep.
I actually began to hope, and I'm dead serious, that Gus would send out Chandler Cox and run the whirly bird again to break the monotony. I find such thoughts frightening. When an Auburn fan begins to yearn for such things, what does it mean? Am I okay?
I look at the offense. I looked at that, and I just said,
"What the hell is the world coming to?"
That's it. No, I get it. I totally get it. Do you get it? I mean, did you feel that? I just was like, anything, do anything, try something. Just stop doing the same two plays.
Well, and again, the number one thing that Gus, and whether it's Lashley or Chip Lindsey, has not shown, and certainly has not shown in the last 3 years, is adjustments during a game to what the opponent is doing. Sometimes he'll go in with a really good plan, but then things change and you have to adapt, and you have to expect that the opponent will adapt. And at watching this game, Clemson adapted. Early in the game, when Auburn had all that success, Clemson a lot of times is rushing three guys and dropping a lot of guys back, and we were rolling up and down the field on them.
Sure.
And Brett Venables said, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to send five guys every time, and most of the time. And a lot of times I'm going to send a delayed linebacker or the slot covered nickel guy on a blitz or whatever, and at a weird angle. And Auburn's not getting ready for it, and we never pick that stuff up. So the adjusting, like you're saying, once they went to that, that's when we needed to go to the screens, the draws.
Yes.
Like the delay quarterback something. Run, the little slants and stuff. I mean, there were plays in the second half where, you know, the other thing is.
My grandmother could have drawn him up. Yes.
We're going to go into Stidham. We're going to get some questions about him, and I'll come back to that. Our next question is from Stephen.
Hold on that thought, because I wanted to get a response.
All right.
Somebody had a really fascinating statistic on Twitter the other day. They said that, because I mentioned that this game felt like the Georgia game last year, right? And I was saying it just seems like another one of these games where we come out and on the first drive we're unstoppable, and then we don't do anything the rest of the game unless we get like a turnover like we did on their 20 and we got another field goal out of it. I mean, if not for that turnover, the score would have been 14-3.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, you know, once again we score on the opening drive and then nothing the rest of the game. And somebody pointed out the last three straight Georgia games we've scored on the opening drive and not again.
Yeah, that's James Jones, I think, replying to you.
Holy cow. If that's not an indictment, I mean, this is a pattern. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. John, we are getting the same result every time. We keep thinking, oh, well, if we just fix this or fix that. No. We keep fixing things, and we keep getting the same result.
This is a question that kind of goes in that direction. It's from Stephen Kessel, and he says, Am I wrong to still trust Gus? Last year, the Clemson game made Gus look like a terrible coach. However, he got the offense turned around by game five, and we ended up beating another SEC West team by 53 points. Mm-hmm. Is there any indication the same scenario won't happen this year?
Somebody said we should have put Sean White in there in the third quarter if he was eligible, right? And I they said we should have played him. And I said, if you play Sean White in that game, they're carrying him out on a stretcher in the third quarter.
He'd have been carried out on a stretcher in the second quarter.
He would have, he had a season-ending injury. I don't have any doubt about that.
But also, like, In a minute, I want to do an exercise where we're going to apportion some blame. I'm not there yet because we have a few more questions I want to get through. But I want you to think about this question.
All right.
Like coaches, game plan, during game coaches, position coaches, receivers, offensive line, quarterback, how we're going to apportion blame.
Okay.
All right. But his question, Stephen Kessel asked, I 100% believe that the offense is going to get semi-fixed like it did last year. And I also believe that Pettway is a running back who is much more effective against the weaker teams, against the Arkansas and Ole Misses and stuff. He's going to lay waste to those teams. But he's not a great run, even 100% healthy. I don't think he's going to be great against the Clemsons and Alabamas and Georgias.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that's just the style of back that he is.
Yeah.
So I really believe that the offense is going to get back on track and we're going to lay waste to the next three or four teams in the schedule. Because, again, you know, it's Mercer.
Yeah, we'll kill them. Missouri,
who just fired their defensive coordinator because they are dreadful.
Yeah.
Mississippi State at home.
And Ole Miss at home.
And Ole Miss, you know, is got torched by, you know, whoever there, some directional Tennessee school over the weekend. So I 100% believe that before we go to LSU, the offense will be rolling. But I'm in a point, you were talking earlier about losing the confidence thing. I'm at a point where Gus and all the offensive coaches, all of them as a group, not Gus, not Lindsay, I'm talking about all of them, have got to prove it to me against a good team. So LSU, Georgia, or Alabama are the three chances against good defensive teams that are left on the schedule that they have to prove it to me, and they got to go out and deliver some yards and some big points in one of those games.
It's not going to happen. We're going to go 0-4 against him, and that's going to be it.
I'm not there yet, but that's where I am with the thing.
How did I pass you? How did I get in the left lane and go past you over the last few days? How did that happen?
I don't know, but to me, the rolling up yards against Ole Miss isn't going to convince me of anything.
No.
Just laying it out there, because that's 100% coming.
Yeah.
All right, our next question comes from Steven, who says, it's clear that Chip is taking Gus's offense and meshing it with his own. Do the concepts involved make this impossible to work?
Let me throw my spin on it here, because this is something I wanted to ask you and I forgot to ask you. The offensive line, I mean, I was going to ask you a minute ago if you heard Barrett Salee today. His podcast?
No, I didn't listen to it today.
Okay. Well, he says, number one, that was absolutely Gus Malzahn calling the plays, and you're crazy if you believe anything different. And number two, he says, the offensive line was the worst performance he's ever seen by a good offensive line, and that was pretty much 90% of the problem, more or less, is what he said.
I would tell you, go back and read, Jason Ferguson's column today, or the Jones's column on College of Magnolia, Ferguson's columns at SEC Country, and both of them did the same thing where they took every single sack and they put the GIF in there, the play, and they go through it and they talk about who's at fault.
Yeah.
And there are ones where the offensive line's at fault, and there's ones where Stidham's at fault, and there's ones where a couple where the defense just makes a great play and it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The second time we got to the goal line, okay, the second series where we kicked the field goal, it's third and five, and we're at the goal line, and our All-American offensive lineman, Braden Smith, gets absolutely annihilated, and that guy grabs Stidham by the knees and brings him down. There were multiple receivers open at the goal line, including Pettway, was standing at the goal line straight ahead of Stidham.
Yeah.
And Stidham stepping back, getting ready to throw. And our best offensive lineman got annihilated as Stidham got dragged down. So, I mean, that was 100% on Braden Smith.
How do you explain that?
I mean, how do I explain it? Clemson's got two All Americans playing defensive tackle. I would say this now, and I don't care who you are. that is better than Alabama's defensive line this year. It is. 100%. And Alabama was as good last year, may have been better last year with the guys they had. But that defensive line is better than Alabama's. And so
– how many games does this Clemson team win regular season?
Oh, they're going to win – with Florida State's quarterback going down, they're going to win the ACC and go to the playoff.
They're going to go 12-0? No, you know what they're going to do? They're going
to
mess
around. They're going to go 11-1. They'll lose to – like they have to go to Virginia Tech – and they'll lose to them or, you know, somebody else they shouldn't, NC State or somebody.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, last year they should have lost to NC State, and they did lose to Pitt. You know, a team that beat Alabama and Auburn and Florida State and Louisville, if I remember correctly. And yet it's hard to go undefeated. But this team, 11-1, I agree. I think
I think the rest of the ACC is taking a gigantic step backwards. I mean, Florida State is – you know, without their starting quarterback, and it's not going to be the same.
I want to amend that. Let me amend that for a second. They may, just because, like you say, the ACC is back a little bit, but let me just amend that one thing. I have fallen prey too many times to the, if you beat Auburn, you must be godlike and go undefeated the rest of the season. Remember when Clemson played us so tough in 2010, mm-hmm. and we're like, oh, that Clemson team, they're awesome because they almost beat us. That Clemson team ended up going like 7-5. So just pump the brakes a little bit on, if you annihilate, you know, if you do that, if you play that well against Auburn and blow up our offensive line and everything, the next team they play, they may not do that to their offensive line. In fact, they're playing Louisville this weekend. That's going to be a good game. So Louisville could beat them.
Defense is amazingly bad.
Yeah, which is weird because they were so good 2 years ago. Yeah, I mean, they may very well go undefeated. Who knows? But then again, they may go 8-4. You know, I mean,
they're not good 8-4.
I'm just saying, don't draw too many conclusions from one game, especially against Auburn, because we have a tendency to make teams that, you know, look better than they actually are sometimes.
That's fair.
I've seen it too many times. Too many times.
All right, we have a lot more questions than a
good
lot
Lord.
More. Still want
That's
to talk
all
about.
We're going to do tonight is answer questions.
All right, this question's from Auburn Elvis.
Oh, no. What's he got?
All right, he says, it looks like we're going to struggle against good defenses, but that our defense should keep us in every game. They don't get completely exhausted for being on the field too long.
And resentful.
Knowing this, how should we as fans act? Should we complain constantly? Should we really spend the next 3 months criticizing players, coaches, and our athletic director? That doesn't sound like any good way to support Auburn football, but really, what are your opinions on how fans should act when the season doesn't go how we think it should?
I plan to complain. I'm just being honest.
Well, here's my question for you. The problem is they won't do this because there's all this, the offense, Gus, you know, the Stidham and Lindsey hype stuff, but any other person who looked at this team and that defense would go, holy crap, the offense has got to just not screw it up. I think a lot of coaches would look at this team and go like Tuberville, old school.
Yeah.
Run the ball, super conservative, don't turn it over, play to win with defense, we'll win a lot of 10-9 games.
Yeah. Like in basketball, when we just run the clock. Pass it. Look for that one good shot. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's, you know.
That's exciting, John.
but it's one of those things, like, if the goal is to win, I think that's a winning strategy.
Well, I thought that's what we were going to do to Clemson. I thought, good Lord, we're going to win this game 6-0 because they couldn't cross the 50-yard line. And they had
they were going to score sooner. Well, it was very much that one Alabama game where we kicked field goals at the beginning.
They had that one drive at the end of the first half, and then that one drive at the beginning of the second half, and that was it. We shut them down. Other than that, they didn't get within field goal range hardly, except for that one missed field goal.
That's it.
We dominated time of possession in the first half, especially up until that first drive, their first touchdown drive. So I thought, man, if we can just do in the second half, I was not happy. I wasn't happy. That's not the way I wanted to win. I didn't want to do one of those Auburn Mississippi State 3-2 games, though I thought that it was going to be 6-3 or something. But I thought, you know what? I'll take it. If we can go six, if we can just eat up the clock and keep them off the field and win 6-3, I'll take it. And then I'll complain about the offense, but we'll be 2-0 and have beaten the defending national champions. Yeah, I'll take it. So I'm like, anything I could have taken from this game other than the defense, I didn't get. And that's a big part of why I'm so angry.
All right, next question is from Ken Ringer, who says, is Malzahn too conservative? Like they were, he was referencing how Spurrier at times would just go for the fourth down every time and that kind of thing. Do you think Malzahn is too conservative in games now?
Who would have thought that Tommy Tuberville, the riverboat gambler, and Gus Malzahn is too conservative? I mean, it's sort of, they have the reputation the other way around, you know?
And yet, but I think Gus took a lot of chances early and has it taken any recently? I don't know.
No, I mean, we don't do the onside kicks anymore. We don't do the swinging gate extra points anymore. Mm-hmm. All the fun stuff that I used to love, we've become like Pat Dye football or something. I don't understand it. I feel like we should fire this coach and go hire Gus Malzahn from 2009. That's the coach true. I liked. I liked that Gus Malzahn guy back in 2009, 2010. What's he doing now? Is he available? Is he coaching somewhere in the Patriot League or something? Can we hire him?
Mm-hmm.
That's who I want.
All right. Auburn Tiger Talk says, are we better off going to the Tony Franklin system?
What's the Tony Franklin system?
You know, remember Tony Franklin that came for Tuberville, the offense, the Tony Franklin offense system?
Oh, I was thinking about the Penn State coach. That's James Franklin.
No.
Well, that's – I have a list of coaches, John. I have in my hand. I have put a search committee together.
Oh, good gosh. We're way too early for that.
And by search –
he's back on the throttle.
And by search committee, I mean search engine. I went on Google – and I Googled top 25 college football head coaches. And I went down that list to see if any of them would be available and a good fit. Because, like, there's plenty of them I'd love to have, but just wouldn't be available and wouldn't be a good fit, like Peterson at Washington. I've come around to him after you recommended him years ago, and I was like, nah, but now I've come around to him. But
that was... What was that, 2013 or 12 or whatever? 12, I was asking.
Yeah. Instead, we went and hired this Gus Malzahn guy that got us the national championship game. I felt like a genius there for about a year, and ever since then, not so much. But, James Franklin is the only one that really jumped out at me as might be a good idea if you go somewhere else. The rest of them, I mean, Jimbo Fisher is the only other one, and I don't really like Jimbo that much anymore. I liked him when he was Terry Bowden's quarterback coach. That's about it.
He's got too much Florida State in him now.
Yeah.
All right. Neil asked an interesting question. He says, Stidham never had to read coverages his whole career. He freelanced at Baylor in high school, and now we see the result. He feels like it was a bad choice. And the other question that he asked, other people asked, like, if Malzahn's offense really, really requires a running quarterback to be very effective, then just put Malik Willis in and just run, you know, run the breakout, the 2013 stuff.
Get him killed. Maybe so. Yeah, it's funny because we were thinking Stidham was like the last great move by Rhett Lashley, and now people are thinking Rhett screwed us again.
I want to be clear. Like, Stidham is rusty, okay? And he did not have a good game the other night either.
No.
But I also feel like he was running for his life a lot of that game. Yeah. And there, like we were talking about, there weren't a lot of easy layup kind of plays, passes for him to throw.
He didn't call the plays. He didn't call.
There were plays that were like downfield that we just needed to chuck it down there and make something happen.
Yep.
And he didn't do that. But I think
I'm not close to giving up on him. I think he'll be fine. It's just that up against Clemson in his second game on the road against that defense, yeah, I mean, and not giving him any help. I mean, when Steve Spurrier would put a quarterback in, he would call plays that gave the guy a chance to get warmed up and get going.
Yes.
And they stuck Stidham out there and says, chuck it and duck it, you know, let it fly. Let it fly, boy, let it fly. And I'm just, God, I mean, give him a couple of, I don't know, just something.
All right, we got more questions.
I'm just making my disgusting noises for the rest of the show.
Dan in North Carolina says, it's too early to panic. Last year's brain trust with Lastry was able to turn the offense around. He thinks Lindsey can too. Given the play selection, he thinks Lindsey was calling the plays. It was just not an effective game. Do you agree?
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
I think Chip Lindsey called the plays. I just think he's was in a box that Malzahn put him in. Watching Malzahn while the plays are being called and stuff, I do not think he acted like Malzahn, the play caller from the last couple of years.
I got nothing.
Logan Chilton has a couple of good questions. He says, this is his question from last week. Aren't you glad that we aren't the Aggies?
Would you rather
lose the way we did or blow a 38-point lead?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's worse. That's worse. Yeah.
And he asked a really good question. When are we going to stop these slow developing plays?
But you know what though, John? You know what? You know how you fix the problem Texas A&M had? Call better plays. That's a lot easier fix than our fix. Their fix is just run the ball and run out the clock in the second half. Don't keep throwing it with your true freshman. Their fix is stop being stupid. Ours is a little more complex. So honestly, I'd rather lose the way we did than the way they did, but a loss is a loss, and I'd rather have their problem than our problem.
I think some people would say we were both being stupid, but Logan Chilton says, when are we going to stop these slow developing plays? Good defenses kill us on those plays. We can't maintain the box. And this is the – those are the Gus Malzahn staples.
Yeah.
You know exactly which ones we're talking about too. The fake to the running back and then the fake to the guy running by in the sweep or reverse or whatever. Oh, and then he turns around to throw the ball.
Oh, my God!
This is the other thing. I don't know if you noticed this. I tweeted this out during the game. We had more passing yards in the first half last year than we did this year.
Yeah, clearly the solution was to play Chandler Cox at quarterback more in this game.
Where was Jeremy Johnson when we needed him?
Jeremy Johnson could complete a pass. I mean, occasionally it was to the wrong player. The wrong team, yeah, I know.
He was not afraid to just throw it down.
Jeremy Johnson could complete a freaking pass and not just get sacked every play. I didn't think that this game would make me nostalgic for the halcyon days of the Jeremy Johnson offense, but honestly.
You're killing me.
It's true. I mean, Jeremy Johnson threw the ball and somebody caught it. They might be a Clemson player, they might be an Auburn player, but somebody caught the dang ball. He didn't just keep eating it every play. You know? I mean, look, with our defense, just chuck the ball up. If they intercept it, we'll stop them. If you throw it deep enough and pin them on the 20, we'll stop them and get it back anyway. And then chuck it up again. Maybe one out of three we catch for a touchdown. Hey, we win. Why leave the game with bullets still in your gun?
That's fair. Josh Corbett asks, why do you think Stidham is keeping hesitating in the pocket on throws? He looks timid, and he does kind of...
He doesn't want to throw an interception.
But I think he's like... wants the guys to be open.
Yeah.
And in the Big 12, there may be a lot more of that.
Yeah, you think at Baylor those receivers weren't like 10 yards separated from their DBs? Yes. I mean, he said that the Baylor offense was so simple he could teach it to his grandmother in 5 minutes. That's what he said.
Yes.
Something to that effect.
Yes. But I think, and we're going to get into this, but I think, you know, the Clemson quarterback several times during the game just threw the ball up there. And the most of the time, the Clemson receivers made a play and went and got the ball. And yeah. I think Stidham did not do that enough. And when he did, the Auburn players did not make that play.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't understand it, but I totally agree. And over and over, the Clemson quarterback hit us with those over-the-shoulder kind of fade passes. And we couldn't do that to save our lives, apparently. Or we weren't willing to try it. Man.
All right. Emily Rios asks, if this wasn't just the same thing all over again, we'd be thrilled at keeping this game close. But this is just awful.
The same thing all over again. Exactly.
She says, can Jarrett Stidham learn to get rid of the ball? Is the offensive line performance the usual slow start indicative of the Clemson D or worse? How do you fix this?
That's it. Those are the million-dollar questions.
And here's a couple answers. Number one is you have to give Clemson credit because I think their defensive line and their defense overall and their defensive coordinator is excellent. Again, when's the last time Clemson played a big game? Oh, yeah, when they shut out. You know, they beat Alabama, and in the game before that, they shut out Ohio State in a playoff game.
They did. That's
so,
true.
You know, they're pretty good, and their defensive coordinator is excellent, and they have a bunch of guys playing defensive line. They're all going to be first-round draft picks, and that two of those guys are going to be, like, top 10 draft picks. Dexter Lawrence is maybe the first pick in the draft the year he comes out. So those guys are studs. So that contributed to the offensive line's performance, but the offensive line had a dreadful day, one of the worst days ever. But it's not the first time a team has had a bad offensive line performance, and you have to adjust when it happens. You have to help them. You have to call different plays. You can't keep calling 30-yard pass plays, because by the time the receivers get there, they turn around and Stidham's on the ground with guys on top of them. So I think, have to go in with a different plan. I think the offense will get better. I think Stidham, a couple of games from now, is going to be making a bunch of plays and a bunch of throws that people are going to be delighted with him. I really, really do. And I think he has a lot of talent, and it's going to come through.
And then people are going to say, well, with the coaching he's apparently getting right now, are we sure about that? So,
well, but it goes back to what I said earlier. They have to prove it to me in a game against one of those teams.
Right.
I don't care how a gazillion yards that he throws for against Ole Miss or whatever, Arkansas.
John, we got to thank our Patreon folks. This show is on the air largely because of these folks. If you want to help us stay on the air and try to provide audio mental therapy to the Auburn family in times like this, in times of great trial and tribulation – and by the way, we're sorry that we've been slow getting the new episode out. We were going to do one last week, but Dragon Con week is always a bad week because I'm down in Atlanta until, you know, late Monday, and it just becomes a big hassle after Monday for us to do a show on a day that we're not used to doing it for our families and everything. So we're back, hopefully back on a regular schedule. But we're on the air because of the great folks in the Auburn family and the White Rocket family and the AU Wishbone family that go to patreon.com, patreon.com. We just got another new one today. And so our current supporters, Nicholas Cottrell, of course, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, Jared Albrick, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Chris Thrash, Wes Atkinson, J.W. Rice, Randall Walker, Richard Stevens. Our newest contributor is Dan Thompson, and of course, Phil Amthor from WeHaveDonuts.com, great Birmingham-based donut place, amazing donuts, as well as we appreciate the one-time anonymous contribution that we got from one of our good friends on Twitter, a listener, and another one we got from another anonymous donor. So we appreciate you guys doing that. If you want to just do a one-time deal, you can just use PayPal. But the easiest way is just for as little as a dollar a month, go to patreon.com and help us pay our bills and stay on the air, and we appreciate it. Do we have any more questions?
Oh, yes, we do.
Well, let's get through them because we're not doing a two-hour show tonight. I'm sure you agree with me on that.
No, we're doing a three-hour show.
Oh, good Lord, no. I didn't even want to do this show at all, honestly, but... You know, it's therapy for me as well as the listeners, and you get to listen to it. You get to deal with it firsthand, so congratulations.
Our next question is from Justin Parker, who says, Is this what we're in store for this season, another poor showing on offense, continually tiring out the defense, leading to L's?
Four of them. Yes, four.
That's Van's prediction.
Yes. It was 11-1, so it's changed very dramatically. Unless something changes that I don't see changing, we're not going to beat the other three big teams. And I hate the fact that I have to include Georgia with Alabama and LSU now. I really hate that. I really hate that. I can't even describe to you how much I hate that.
Ugh. That's fair. All right, okay, here's my question. If the offensive coaching staff get this turnaround, why does this take so long every year? And somebody else asked a similar question about the, you know, Gus figure it out first, you know, quarter of the season every year thing.
Well, we've talked about this a million times. It's one of our working theories, and we have several, is that there's what he wants to do and what the team can do, and he keeps trying at the beginning of the season to do what he wants to do, and then by the third or fourth game, he has started to adjust to what they actually can do.
I think that's fair. I think deploying play, I mean, in coaching, you have to recruit, then you have to develop the players. You have to teach them how to play their position, the skills to play their position. And then you have to deploy them in the game, put them in the right specific positions in terms of their position group and make them successful. And then you have to rotate them in and out and give them rest and that kind of stuff. And then you have to know, like, okay, we're calling this play on offense or defense. This guy is more effective than at that. I need to make sure he's in there. And we're going to come back to that because I have some thoughts about that.
Good.
Our next question comes from Dan Maltby, who says, I saw one of you tweet about what's coming. Would it be a stretch to think Les Miles?
Yes, it would be a stretch. We're not getting Les Miles. If we do, I'm going to have to go back and be an Arkansas State fan again or something.
No, we are not ever hiring Les Miles.
No.
Chris Bush says, my question is, why can't we have nice things? I'll hang up and listen.
I did see that one come across, and I was like, that's the question of the week. That is the question of the week, because it is absolutely true that no matter what we do, no matter what happens, we just cannot have nice things as Auburn fans. It's absolutely true. I don't know the answer. I mean, I sometimes, you know, I've mentioned before that Jordan-Hare Stadium is built on an old goat path, creek. That's what that big pipe under the thing is in the stadium. It's why it drains so well. It's because it's built over a creek, and so the water just runs right out the creek, basically. But I'm thinking that there may be an Indian burial ground under the goat path.
Interesting theory. We'll go for an exorcism down the road.
Yeah. Yep.
Valiant Hermes says, looking forward to the next podcast where you and Van break it all down. He said the offensive line was the biggest problem I saw. Jarrett Stidham had zero time to throw.
Yeah, but you've got to help him. If you know that's happening, how many times you have to get hit in the head before you understand you need to do something about getting hit in the head?
I think you're right. Like, it's you have to, again, as we talked about it before, adjustments. You commit with a plan.
Yeah.
You know they're going to counter it. And then you have to be prepared to counter the counter.
Sure.
Like, you have to say, this is what they're probably going to do. How would we respond to that? And I don't understand why that conversation doesn't take place.
They said, you know, coach, what should we do if they start blitzing us? Oh, they ain't going to blitz us. And then they walked out of the room.
Yeah. Or what if Stidham's running for his life? We're not going to have any success running the ball.
That ain't going to happen. It's not like anything's wrong with Petway's foot or anything. He'll be fine. He'll run for 230 yards. You know, I voted in my own poll. I said, how many yards will he have? Less than 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 150, 150 to 200, or more. I said more than 150 was one of the options. And overwhelmingly, the winner was 100 to 150, and I said 50 to 100, and I was right. Because I generally tend to think that way, that it's not going to be quite what people think, you know.
I think you're correct.
Yep.
All right, that is the end of listener questions.
Wow, that was a 1 hour and 8 minute, roughly, listener question segment. That's pretty impressive.
I have a few other things to say, and then we can talk about the rest of the SEC. How about
you
that?
Do it.
And do our merger scattering report.
I have literally nothing else to say.
All right, here's what I want to say. We're going to stay on the offense. I said this earlier. The coaches as a whole on the offense, everybody wants to point the finger at Gus, and he deserves his share of blame, and Chip Lindsey deserves his share of blame. But I thought also that the wide receivers had a very poor game, and Cody deserves the blame for that 100%. I thought the offensive line had a terrible game, and Herb Hand deserves that. And I thought, you know, Petway banged up. You know, he was clearly about 80%, but he played okay. But we didn't play any other running backs except Cam Martin one carry, and Petway wasn't being super effective. So
and Cox one carry,
and Cox one carry, but he's a, you know, that was kind of a setup trick play kind of thing. I don't even count that. But so, like, to me, you know, I would have liked to seen maybe running the ball outside the tackles. It's a novel concept, but we sometimes are really good at it. And we're running Clemson's two best players in their entire team are the two defensive tackles. So maybe not run straight at them. It's just a theory, but I would have liked to have seen maybe put Cam Martin in and run outside to see what we could do. Also, like, I had real problems with, I think Auburn's, I mean, offensive line had a terrible game, obviously. The two tackles, you know, Prince Tega and Darius James both had terrible games. They got abused again and again and again. By the fourth quarter, like, they were literally, the Clemson defensive linemen were in their heads and in Stidham's head, 100%. But we could, you know, you could put a fullback or a tight end over there. You can, you know, we can do different things. But when both offensive tackles are getting blown by, it doesn't matter which way Stidham rolls because he's getting, you know, chased. Yep. But I want to go back to the receivers because I thought we didn't do a good job putting the right receivers in the game and using them the right way. Like, we threw two deep balls to Eli Stove, okay? And these were passes that Stidham got off. Eli Stove is like the utility Swiss Army knife for the receivers, and he's better at running the ball and the jet sweep and stuff and the screen than he is. He's just one of the smaller ones, and so the defensive back was able to knock the ball away.
Yep.
And if that pass had been thrown and it was Kyle Davis or Slayton or absolutely Nate Craig Myers, I feel like they'd have gone up and got it, or we'd have had a 100 times better chance of them getting it. Yep. So I understand sometimes, like, the, you know, we like Eli Stove, and he's a playmaker and stuff. But I think we have these bigger receivers, and they have to make plays. I thought there was no doubt in my mind watching that game that Clemson's wide receivers were better coached than Auburn's wide receivers. Like, they, when the ball was up there, and they weren't older than our receivers. Okay, there's a bunch of, you know, sophomores and juniors in their receiving corps, and when the ball was up there, they went up and got it, and they made plays, and they were in the right position. And what I saw was, I saw Kyle Davis fall down one time with the defensive. Now, some of that was, again, let's go back. Same routes again and again and again. And when you do that, the defensive back knows where you're going. And they could just turn and go to the spot you're going towards before you get there. So that's setting up the receivers to fail. But I didn't see the receivers making plays. You know, Sal Canella, we didn't exist in the game.
Nope.
We threw the ball once early to Nate Craig Myers and then ignored him. And Slayton must be in the doghouse for how he played last week because we didn't do anything with him in this game.
Nope.
So, and then, like, the guy who could be most effective for the kind of passes we're talking about is, are the two guys are Ryan Davis and Will Hastings. And we threw the ball a couple times to each of them, but we should have done it a lot more because that play was there again and again and again.
They were the only receivers that did anything in the game.
Well, because that was the play that was there. Clemson was, you know, the linebackers were rushing upfield, and the defensive backs were, you know, chasing our wide receivers 30 yards down the field. There was that middle spot that was wide open, and so it was there for the taking. Yep. And so this is the biggest thing in addition to the adjustment is I thought Chip Lindsey's offense was about getting your ball to the playmakers in space and taking what the defense gives you. And we didn't take what the defense gave us the other night. We went into the plan and said, we're doing this. We're running Petway up the middle, and we're throwing the ball 30 yards down the field. What the defense gave us was the five-yard dump-off pass. We could have thrown that pass to Ryan Davis and Will Hastings 50 times for completions and completed them all. And we should have. We should have made them eat that and eat it and eat it and eat it and just roll them the field with that, and don't get greedy and don't get aggressive and don't stop doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, but we refused to do that because we went into our plan and we refused to change. And I mean, I get that. I'm a person who personally and professionally does a lot of planning, and I have a hard time adjusting, you know, when I can't follow through on my plan. And I've had to deal with that. I've had to get you, like, I'm the kind of guy that used to plan my vacations, okay? So that I have to let some of that go. And Gus has to let that go too. You have to let it go and go, this is what they're taking us. We have to, giving us, we have to take it, even if it's not what we wanted to do in our vision for the game. But so I wanted to say that I think each, you know, to me, the deployment of the players in the game, we should have played more running backs than just Petway. I think we should have played Cam Martin some. And I didn't like how we played the wide receiver specifically and who we used and how we used him. And then I thought they're 100% going to be changes in the offensive line lineup before the Mercer game. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, but probably Darius James is going to get benched. They're going to move Braden Smith out to tackle. We'll see. But but again, it goes back to what we said earlier. That's not going to matter until we get to LSU. And Arden Key for LSU is back today, their best pass rusher, and that he is as fast off the edge as that Clemson guy was. So
if we go out against LSU and do what we did against Clemson, we're not going to score 3 points.
No. But before we leave this game and talk about the rest of our deep Mercer preview, I did want to take a minute to talk about how great the defense was because they deserve it.
Yeah.
They went on the road against the national champions, against a team that, you know, while they had lost a bunch of players, a team that, you know, put up whatever 500 yards or 45 points in Alabama the last time they played a real team. And they shut them down. Their defense played amazing. I thought the coverage was great. I thought the tackling was great. I thought the defensive line got good pressure and made plays. It was disruptive. I thought Jeff Holland, I have ragged on him for a year because he was so out of control last year and we're not contributing. But this year, he's really fast and he's causing problems to the other team. I mean, he's absolutely making plays, chasing things down from behind, disrupting things with his speed. He's been a real asset. And you know Marlon Davidson's really good. The linebackers are excellent. They play really hard. And the secondary, I thought a couple times Clemson guys made great plays. They just went up and got the ball. And you just have to tip your hat and go, you know, that's just a great play by the wide receiver. You know what you didn't see in that game? There were no plays where, like, and you haven't seen that in a long time where, like, the other team's wide receivers just running down the field and there's nobody there. Right. Do you remember how often that used to happen?
Oh, yeah.
Like, once or twice a game, the other team's wide receiver would just be uncovered running down the field.
Yes.
And that never happens anymore.
Yeah.
There's an Auburn guy right there. And I thought, you know, Denson coming back, Jeremiah Denson, he was hurt from that terrible Ricky Seals-Jones tackle from a while back, and he played a great game, forced a turnover, recovered it, and, you know, there was a lot of really, really, really great play by the defense. And I think this defense, this is the thing that gets me. The offense doesn't have to be 2013 or 2014. It just has to not suck. And if the offense is decent, if we had the 2009 offense, this team could win the SEC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it really just has to be decent. That's it true. Can't suck. Yep. And that's because the defense is that good. That and I want people to understand this. The Auburn defense, it's real. Okay. That is one of the top five or six defenses in all college football right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put them up against anybody's. They are great. And there are no teams in our schedule that terrify me in terms of their offense is so good that we're going to hold those teams down. Nobody's scoring 30 points against us.
It's just that we're saying, go out there, boys, and hold the national champions to five or fewer points. And that's just not reasonable.
I understand. It is not reasonable. So, but, you know, but anyhow, they played great, and special teams played well. I thought that one punt return late in the game was the other chance we might have had to break the game open, and he was really one guy away from getting it. But that it didn't happen. So, all right.
I'm glad you said that about the defense. That was good. I did a little Mercer preview back on my solo show, just talking about their history. They gave up football for many years. The main issue I have with Mercer is that's where my former boss that I couldn't stand back in Atlanta graduated. So I really don't like Mercer at all, and I want to beat the living snot out of him. This is like a big rivalry game for me now, so I really want to crush him.
This time, it's personal.
I want them.
And I say you.
It's a huge game for me.
Man wants Mercer.
I want Mercer. Bring him on.
Oh, you're killing
and
me.
And then we got Missouri, and I'm going to point out, in case we don't come running back for the big Mercer post-game show in a hurry.
We are good. Well, believe me, we're here.
We'll be here. But, yeah, we got tickets for Missouri, and I'm looking forward to seeing all the Missouri area, Kansas City and Columbia area, Auburn folks, hopefully in about 10 days or whatever, and we go out there for that game. And the game is going to be at 6 or 6:30, so we'll be able to get up early in the morning. About 2 hours from our house to drive over to Columbia, go to the game. I've been waiting so many years for this, John. I just want to cry. We'll be able to drive over there. I'll be able to go to an Auburn game and driving 2 hours. I can't tell you how excited I am. And then we'll be able to go get some good food, hang out with some Auburn folks, go to the game, and then drive home after the game. Imagine that. I get to go to an Auburn game where I don't have to stay in a hotel. That's unbelievable.
That'd be nice.
Unbelievable.
All right. I don't have any thoughts about Mercer. We're going to kill them, and it doesn't matter. But I think this is an opportunity to play a lot of young players. I think you're going to see a lot of the freshmen in this game.
There's some good games this weekend. Like I said, we do want to see Florida State. I mean, Clemson-Louisville should be interesting.
Let's run through the schedule.
Let's do it. Tennessee-Florida? I mean
– Well, no. Well, don't we have some around the SEC music?
Oh. We haven't used it in a long time, have we? Oh, let's see. It's that pink button because it's Mira.
Trip around the FTC.
There we go. Thank you, Mira. Yeah, well, Tennessee, Florida. I mean,
we don't get to talk about last week's games?
No, we don't have time. That Tennessee, Florida, to me, that's a game that used to be the Titanic struggle for supremacy in the SEC. And now it's like, which one of them will do something more stupid to lose? Because they're both going to do something stupid, and which one will be more stupid?
It's funny. I think we would have both. I think the Kentucky South Carolina game might have more to do with the SEC East outcome.
It might. Yeah, South Carolina. Hey, I mean, you know, they're playing very, very well right now. Does Mississippi State have anything for LSU, or is that just going to be a beatdown?
It's in Starkville, so they have a shot. But this will be the game. You know, we play both these teams coming up, so I'm definitely going to watch and see what I can learn about these two teams. But I suspect LSU is too good, but I don't know. I mean, it's a new offensive coordinator. He hasn't really shown us a lot from LSU. Interesting to see what he does. I'm not, you know, not sure. And Mississippi State hired Todd Grantham. So
think about this. If Florida loses to Tennessee this week, they will be 0-2 3 weeks into the season. They will not have won a game yet. Who'd have thought? I mean, I guess that, you know, just because the game was canceled and all that, but Kansas State Vanderbilt. We have to have a segment with the coach, maybe.
That's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, 10:30.
Two pretty evenly matched teams, and then Ole Miss at Cal.
At Cal, that's gonna be like the late Pac-12 game, and it's Ole Miss. Wow. Cal will win, but I'll watch that just because I like the Pac-12 game.
I think Ole Miss can beat them. Cal's terrible. They beat North Carolina a couple weeks ago, but they're not good.
Well, the thing that's interesting is I like the late games on days that Auburn doesn't lose excruciatingly painful games, because I didn't want to watch another game after Auburn lost the other night. I just didn't want to. I didn't watch my usual Pac-12 nightcap game because I didn't want to see more football. I said that on Twitter, and somebody said, "Yeah, I don't want to see players do plays and actually execute the plays. It's just frustrating." Purdue at Missouri. You know, they just fired the defensive coordinator. Missouri did. That's a weird time to do it. I was saying, keep him around two more games, man.
They were saying today it was not on the field stuff. There was some kind of off the field problem, but whatever.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, maybe he was screwing around or drinking too much or not showing up for meetings, whatever. But Purdue, you know, hired the Jeff Brohm as their coach, and they've been kind of feisty. So that could be like a shootout, kind of entertaining game.
Yeah. Is Colorado State's not bad, right? I mean, that's Bobo.
You know who their coach is, right?
Bobo.
Oh yeah,
Bobo.
They're good on offense, but Colorado beat them pretty solidly.
Wasn't that the monkey that threw the pie at Reagan?
No, I don't think. I think it was another name.
That was Bonzo. That's right.
Nobody besides us has any idea what he's talking about.
Bonzo. Well, that could be interesting, though. I mean, Colorado State might hang on with them for like a half a quarter, right? And then it's going to be taillights. But. And there's that ever-present Louisiana that I still don't know exactly who they are. It's the Raging Cajuns, isn't it?
It's one of them.
Yeah, we've given up trying to figure out who Louisiana is. I think LSU wants to just get rid of that. They don't like the idea of there being a University of Louisiana. They just like it being LSU and then those directional schools. But at A&M, I mean, is A&M going to banish some of their demons, or is this another one of those games where they're going to be like, oh my gosh, it's the fourth quarter and we're tied with Louisiana, whoever that is?
I think they were tied with Nicholls State last week in the second half. So, they benched your once favorite recruit, Kellen Mond, and went back to
5 minutes.
Stepanek, or whatever, Scupanon, whatever that guy's name is. But this is the current working theory is we don't do the column anymore. We do power rankings, but I think there's a real bottom tier in the West now that's like A&M, Arkansas, and Ole Miss are in that tier.
Wow.
I mean, Arkansas got beat at home by TCU 28-7.
Yeah, that's not good.
And I don't know if it was that close. Mm. So, and A&M does not have a quarterback. And, you know, Ole Miss can't stop anybody. Ole Miss is kind of turning into like Texas Tech. I mean, their only chance is to beat you like 50-49. So, those teams are a tier down, and then it's like Mississippi State, and then Auburn and LSU.
John, my last thing here is I'm thinking about us putting together a Wishbone power poll that's not just you and me, but maybe we'll bring in some of our inner circle, some of the Patreon folks. We'll get a vote, a couple other maybe people that contribute to the show now and then and all. And have like a weekly power poll of the SEC 1-14. You have any thoughts on that? Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Be fun.
Okay. We might work on that this week. Maybe get contact some of the – maybe that'd be like an incentive to be part of our Patreon, right, as you get to participate in the power poll for as little as $1 a week on patreon.com. Just look
–
A month, sorry. Oh, $1 a week would be fine too. But yeah, patreon.com, $1 a month or more. We appreciate more, but you can just go patreon.com/Van Allen Plexico or just patreon.com and search Van Plexico or just Plexico, and I should pop right up, and it's the Wishbone, Van Plexico Wishbone account. Every cent we get on there goes straight toward paying our expenses and getting us on the air and all that cool stuff. Any last thoughts before we mercifully put this to bed?
I have one last question.
Yes.
Is this the slow decline into futility, or is this it's always darkest before the dawn?
It's 8-4. That's what it is. It's 8-4. Mark my words. I was 11-1 until I saw our offense is exactly the same as last year, and now we're 8-4. It's the prelude. We should call this Auburn 2017, prelude to a coaching change.
I wanted to spend a bunch of time talking about the psychology of Gus after that game, but we didn't even get into that.
Oh, man. Gus had me pulling my hair out.
I'm talking about going forward.
Oh, Lord.
Like, if you are going to take the amount of crap they're going to take this week, is your inclination to let go and to tell your new offensive coordinator, do what you want to do? You have operational freedom. Or is it to pull it closer and go, I have veto power at every play you're calling?
Well, I think the ultimate inclination for him is
smoke weed every day.
But that's how we lost three players to begin the season. Gus's trend is never constant with that. Remember, it was like I need to be a football coach. I need to be a football coach. I'm going to get back to coaching. And then like two games later, Rhett's going to call the plays. Rhett's going to be the coordinator. I'm just going to be the coach. And then like 2 weeks later, it's like it changes with the breeze. Who knows? Whatever he says this week, 3 weeks from now, it'll be something different. I'm getting kind of impatient with it and fed up. Here we go again. You done got me all stirred up again, John. My gosh.
And I'm sorry.
Have you noticed the more stirred up and fired up I get about this stuff, the more Southern I sound?
Yes.
Because I've noticed that. When I'm just talking normally, I speak more like this. And when I get really fired up and I start talking like this, John, it all comes out. All that background, all my Sylacauga that I spent years covering up out here in the North, it all starts coming back. I'm not putting on, man. It just does. It starts coming back. But I can't take another year like this. We've got to do something. I mean, I've been on the bus. I've been on the bandwagon. I've been a staunch supporter. But I got to draw a line somewhere. And what I saw with the offensive brain-dead play calling and the offensive line play and the receivers play, and it's just, it just is pounding your head into the wall over and over and over. And at some point, you got to either get a helmet or quit pounding your head in the wall or do something, you know?
I hear you.
You're not quite ready to pull the trigger yet, but...
No, but I think I made my position clear.
Yeah, I have too.
But the difference between you and me is that I think, you know, my challenge is they could meet it. I think it's possible. Yeah. I think the offense could show up in one of those games and play well, and that would be good enough for us to win.
I've said that for 3 years now. I just keep clinging to the memories of 2013, and I'm beginning to think that coach is no longer around. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something to the old cliche. Maybe he did forget how to coach.
I don't believe that, honestly.
Then why doesn't he coach? Why don't they do it, for crying out loud?
I think part of it is that he had so much success that he wants to do things exactly the same way.
I don't know.
It's like it literally exactly the same way.
Maybe so.
Football has moved on.
You know, here's all right. This really is my last thing, unless you come up with some other very clever thing to draw me out again. I blame you. I do not
blame yourself.
I don't. But you know, we've used this analogy before, that in soccer, whether your manager is good or not, after a few years, you change anyway because other teams have figured you out, right? Brazil doesn't keep the same manager every time they go to the World Cup. They change out managers every single time, win or lose, because they know that even if they win, the other teams will figure them out by the next World Cup. And I'm kind of getting that way about college football coaches, that you know, it may be just time to turn things over. I mean, we were ready to do that to Tuberville after 5 years. My gosh, right? We did it at Chizik after four. Maybe it's just time to churn things up again. And I just feel bad for all these great receivers that we have that came in thinking that we have an offensive genius of a system, and they're going to end up not even getting drafted and being nothing because they never got the real opportunity to play in an offense that gets them the dang ball and puts them in a position and coaches them up and puts them in a position to succeed. That burns me up. We got these guys in, and I'm afraid we got them in under false pretenses. I hate to say that. I really hate to say that. But I start, you know, we bring in these top 10 recruiting classes, and I'm thinking we send one guy to the NFL. I mean, something's going on. Something. I don't know.
If you were a top high school quarterback, would you commit to Auburn right this minute?
We're not getting Fields. If we were, we're not now. Why would he come do that? I mean, I know they'll tell him, look, you come in here and we won't be in that situation. You'll fix everything. And maybe he'll believe that. And maybe he'll look at this situation and say, the receivers aren't open. The offense is brain dead. The play calling is inept and stubborn. Why would I want to put my future in that situation where I could go play for Jimbo Fisher or Bobby Petrino? God help us, Bobby Petrino. I don't want him. But you know what I mean as far as quarterbacks. Why, sure. If I want to go play for Smart at Georgia or something, I mean – there's plenty of places you can go if you're a good quarterback that you're clearly going to get put in a better position to get in the NFL than you are right here right now. Again, I hate to say it. I want to smash myself with a hammer quicker than say that. But it's absolutely true. You got to be honest. It's absolutely the truth. I'm going to go ahead and close my list of top 25 coaches on my coaching search. Because you didn't want to talk about that tonight, so I'll just leave that.
I am a long way from there.
All right. Well, I'm not.
And you know what? If the defense doesn't allow a point the rest of the season, we'll win those games.
Well, yeah. <It's> okay. I'll co-sign on that. If the defense doesn't allow another point the rest of the season, we will win a few games. We may have some 0-0 games, but go to overtime. But all right. You ready to rock it up? Lock it up? Close it down? Shut it down? Turn it off?
It's fine. I've done what I can do.
This has been potentially – And it's not really we've had a contentious show at all. We never do. But this has been our most controversial show, our most contentious show. What do you think?
No. Listen, if you think these days are dark, feel free to download some of our 2012,
the trips to the dentist. The trip to the dentist for another root canal, courtesy of Dr. Chizik. Dr. Chizik's got some fine drill work he'd like to hook you up with.
And it's pretty relatable for me because I went to the dentist today, so I'm feeling the 2012. Okay?
Oh, man, I'm sorry to bring that back to you so hard. Dang, I'm sorry. Sorry that my metaphor was painful for you.
You know, if you think we were depressed and struggling, you should go back and listen to that stuff.
Oh, gosh. It lives forever on the internet somewhere, whether we like it or not.
That's right. Or at the other end of the spectrum, if you want to get cheered up, just go back and listen to the Iron Bowl 2013 podcast again.
Someday we'll win another one, and it'll be awesome before the show's over. Wow. All right, we're going to get on out of here for another week. We'll see you guys again bright and early after the Mercer game and be all getting ready for the trip to Missouri, where I'll try to do some on-the-spot reporting. That should be a lot of fun. John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/AUWishbone and follow the show on Twitter at AUWishbone. War Eagle.
So what becomes of
All right, that's an hour and a half show. I'll edit together here tonight. I gotta get up early.
Yeah, me too.
That was fun, in a way, I guess. I guess that's what you call it.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
All right, we got through it. Let's go out and win the rest of them.
That's right.
All right, night-night.
Night.
Go to bed.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.